From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. What a program in store for you tonight. My guest tonight will be John Rappaport. John is an investigative reporter, and he thinks there is something wrong, deadly wrong, about SARS and monkeypox, and he'll explain why in just a moment. John Rappaport has worked as an investigative reporter for 20 years. He has written on medical fraud, deep politics, health issues for newspapers, magazines in the United States and Europe, including CBS, Health Watch, Spin Magazine, Stern, which is in Germany. John, welcome to Coast. How are you tonight?
Great. Great to be here, George.
It's my pleasure. And thanks for doing the work that you've been doing. You know, in the old Navy times, we would call it yeoman's work.
Well, got certain qualities of that in it. You keep on digging and digging.
Absolutely. Now, SARS first, monkeypox second, or are they somewhat related for what you're doing?
Well, they're related in a sense, but there's a great deal more information on SARS, so I think we ought to start there.
Okay. Now, this at least occurred media-wise several months ago, but you contend that this is really not a new disease, right?
That's right. Basically, what's happened here is, and I'll give some evidence to support this, what we're really looking at here is recycled and reshuffled cases of regular pneumonia, flu, lung infections, even possibly tuberculosis, all over the world. And some of these cases have been recycled under a new label, which is, of course, SARS. This strikes people as being completely impossible, but everything hinges on this coronavirus, which has been called the cause of SARS, mm-hmm. and thereby distinguishes it from regular pneumonia and regular flu. And because I've been investigating medical research for about the last 20 years now, I knew that the place that I had to start was with this coronavirus.
Right.
So I began to research this, and pretty soon a very important scientist in Canada named Dr. Frank Plummer, who is pretty much the lead scientist at the World Health Organization lab in Winnipeg, began to issue statements to the press. And Dr. Plummer began saying, you know, we're finding the SARS virus in 80% of the people, the coronavirus, and 80% of the people that we're diagnosing as probable cases of SARS. And then he lowered that estimate. He said, now we're finding it in 60%. He lowered it again to 40, and then 30%. And finally, on May 1st, addressing a health summit in Canada, he made the unbelievable statement that they were now finding the coronavirus in 0% of suspected or diagnosed SARS cases.
How could it start so high and then come all the way down to zero?
Exactly. I mean, these are very troubling questions. In fact, even at 80%, by traditional medical standards, this does not rate the coronavirus as a cause of disease, because you really need to find it in every patient, but realistically speaking, you want to certainly be up around 90%.
Mm-hmm.
So here was the lead scientist saying these things, and although it was covered in the press, in the National Post in Canada and the New York Times, it was virtually ignored by everybody else in the World Health Organization and the CDC in Atlanta and the other major medical researchers involved.
Right.
And so I began to question, well, wait a minute now. This is proof that, in fact, this is not the right virus. If you can't possibly say that a virus found in 0% of patients is causing some kind of disease. But Plummer went even further, and he said, you know, another curious thing is that the patients in which we do find this coronavirus, we're finding such tiny, tiny, tiny amounts that we have to use certain amplification procedures, mainly what's called a PCR test, to blow up these little fragments that we think are viral fragments so that we can even look at them. Well, the first thing that anybody knows about disease research is that traditionally, in order to say that a germ causes a disease, you have to find a whole bunch of it in a patient. Enormous amounts.
Well, it's got to be all through his body, right?
All through his body, or in certain pockets you're going to find huge amounts, and they were taking nasal swabs, and so that was where you would expect to find it, in the nasal passages into the lungs. And they were finding, he said, almost none, which was another tip-off that they had gone down completely down the wrong track. Well, the next thing that hit me between the eyes was an article, got quite a bit of exposure for about a day or two, that indicated that there were 11 laboratories in the world that were doing virtually all the research on SARS. They were World Health Organization laboratories that stretched out from Hong Kong to Canada. They were linked up by a closed internet system. No outsiders
could get into it. Okay.
They were flashing test results all over the world to one another, and blood sample results and all sorts of things. They weren't publishing their findings on the coronavirus in the normal way in peer-reviewed medical journals where other scientists around the world could try to confirm or deny their findings.
Mm-hmm.
It was all a very closed game. And so here we had this situation where they had obviously made some horrendous mistakes and had chosen a virus that had nothing to do with anything, and they were pushing it to the hilt. They were trying to develop a vaccine. I've spoken with a number of scientists from Canada to China who have been complaining to me off the record that they think that all of this research has gone down the wrong track, but they can't get in on it because it's a closed club.
Now, is it still, or has it ever been, John, a serious disease?
Not really. When you look at the statistics, let me give you some other statistics which are very illuminating here. If we disconnect the coronavirus from what's being called SARS, we are basically talking about regular pneumonia, regular flu, regular lung infections, regular TB. Well, every year in the world, we see roughly 4.4 million deaths from acute lower respiratory infections. TB kills about 3 million people a year. Every year in Hong Kong, 3,000 people die from regular pneumonia.
And that probably doesn't get reported on.
It gets reported on, but, yeah, it's a very good question. Nobody pays any attention.
Exactly.
In other words, you don't see people with masks walking around. You don't see travel advisories. You don't see billion-dollar economic losses. You don't see people being chained to their beds. In fact, in Canada, about 7,500 people every year die from ordinary flu pneumonia. And again, these are considered to be contagious diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, we have seen none of the hysteria, the craziness that has accompanied SARS. And the one statistic that really blows everybody away is, if you're just looking at respiratory infections, you're talking about roughly 1.9 billion cases every year on the planet. So now you look at around, we're hearing, 8,500 cases of SARS, about 800 deaths, and you compare this to these other statistics, and it's not even on the radar screen, and yet Canada is probably going to suffer over $2 billion worth of economic loss, the same at least as much in Asia. There are some very angry people there who want to recover their losses. And I have been in touch with some of these people, and when I explain to them this very basic kind of research science, you know, their blood pressure goes up about 80 points right away.
Well, why the apparent outcry for this SARS, for the kind of media coverage that we've seen over the last several months, which, by the way, seems to be waning away, as I mentioned a few moments ago. What caused this uproar?
Well, I think we have to look now at some rather clandestine factors behind the scenes. In other words, who benefits from this?
Okay.
Who would want to launch what is really a phony epidemic on the world, and what would their reasons be?
How do they gain?
How do they gain, exactly? Well, the first thing that we can look at here is that Canada, which is taking a gigantic economic hit because Toronto is one of its major two or three business and travel centers.
And tourism, sure.
Canada didn't support the war in Iraq. Canada has been brought into a situation where you have a tremendously escalating number of people who go into Canada, buy pharmaceutical drugs at much lower prices, come back into the United States. Pharmaceutical companies in the United States are losing money hand over fist. The numbers that I've seen show that several months ago, perhaps 6 months ago, we were talking about $100 million in drugs brought back into the United States. Now it's up to $1 billion worth.
And they're the same drugs as we get here, except they're just cheaper over there.
Yes, much, much cheaper. And now, perhaps the cherry on the cake is, the United States has been trying to get genetically engineered food into Europe for a long time against much resistance.
True.
So now the United States is filing a suit with the World Trade Organization saying that Europe has no right under free trade to put an embargo on genetically engineered food. The United States has been looking for allies. It got Kenya and Argentina, not what you would call the most heavy-hitting nations, politically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, somebody from the Ministry of Agriculture in Canada announces that Canada is going to support the United States in its suit against the World Trade Organization so that billions and billions and billions of dollars of genetically engineered food can go into Europe. So there seems to be, and I have sources that confirm this to me, a kind of quid pro quo here. In other words, the Centers for Disease Control through the executive branch of the federal government can go to Canada on the quiet and say, look, we can help you with this problem you're having with SARS and all of this, but, you know, we need things from you as well.
Do you believe they actually strong-armed the Canadian government?
Oh, I think there's been a tremendous amount of strong-arming going on here because they need certain things from Canada. They want Canada to stop doing certain things. You saw articles in the newspaper about 2 weeks ago where U.S. officials were saying that the United States was definitely going to retaliate against Canada because Canada wanted to decriminalize marijuana for small users in Canada. There has been a lot of friction there. And when you go into Asia, what you see basically is burgeoning economies doing more and more and more business with China, mainland China, in the background as the most potentially huge exporting economy in the world. And there are always economic and trade wars going on. There are wars between the European Union and the United States. There are wars between the United States and parts of Asia. And this SARS episode has certainly put a crimp in several Asian economies in these economic ongoing wars. So there is an aspect of this, no doubt, that involves economic terrorism.
Interesting.
But I would say beyond that, the thing that we are seeing here is an unprecedented escalation of power on the part of the World Health Organization, which, of course, is part of the United Nations.
It seems then that WHO, World Health Organization, seems to be unwielding some powers that they really never had before. Are they out of control?
Very much so. In fact, the story that I wanted to break for your American audience tonight is that there is a major lawsuit brewing in Canada right now. Groups are talking and getting together and figuring out a way to file a suit against the World Health Organization. Among those issues, of course, would be research fraud, economic loss in the billions in Canada. And it's all basically aimed at just what you said, an organization that has gotten completely out of control, monopolized the research, been able to lay on these incredible travel advisories and quarantines and so forth, and exercise what is really political domination under the guise of medical safety. Back in the mid-80s, I began to see that, wait a minute, you know, these people are floating cover stories here.
For some reason. There's a clandestine reason, I guess you believe.
And the clandestine reason is ultimately an agenda which, and I want to be very careful about how I put this, because most people who work for the World Health Organization are completely unaware of this agenda. They believe that they are doing the very best that they can with the education and the training and the conditioning they've received.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, the agenda that the World Health Organization is forwarding is depopulation.
Oh, my gosh.
And that agenda is being achieved in the third world because the real factors, contaminated water, hunger, starvation, and so forth, is what is killing off people in these countries at an alarming, alarming rate.
I mean, so what you're saying, though, John, is that this organization, funded by who knows who, that this organization is standing idly by, watching millions of people die every year from starvation and unsanitary conditions and all these things that we've just talked about, because their agenda is, instead of having 100 million people out there, we want it down to 10.
That's right. That's the agenda that they are forwarding. Now, to begin to say, you know, who, you know, what individual names we are talking about, again, I am not accusing rank-and-file people who work for the World Health Organization of knowing anything about this, but all one has to do is to look at the effect long-term. And the fact that, I mean, people could get on the phone and say to me, I'm going to quote you chapter and verse from the World Health Organization report that points out the very same things you're talking about. And then my reply to that is, yeah, but what have they really done about it? They have focused all of their attention, in this case with SARS, on something. I mean, you know, call it whatever you want to, 8,000 cases, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, whatever you want to say. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what is really killing people in these countries, and yet all of this attention and money and cover story has been applied to this. The fear is the major component of these operations, and in the case of SARS, certainly we're looking at a staged, gigantic global propaganda event, and in other situations we are quite probably looking at the same kind of thing. To keep people in fear, to keep them under control, to be able to say to them, you're going to have to give up your rights because, after all, it's public health and nobody's going to dispute that, and everybody agrees. And without any ideology or flag waving or left versus right or Democrat versus Republican, 30 years from now, somebody comes and looks at America and says, wow. Wow, there just seems to be a lot less freedom around than there used to be.
Mm-hmm. Let's take some phone calls, John. Okay. East of the Rockies, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, this is David calling from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, David.
I'm trying to figure in where, I'm sure you gentlemen must know about the publication, The Limits to Growth.
Yes.
And how all this figures in to
Club
what
of
you're
Rome.
Talking about as far, yes.
Okay.
I've got a copy that's almost 30 years old.
Population control, is it
Population
not?
Population control.
Yeah.
And exponential, you know, growth. And along with, I mean, back in the 70s, they talked about birth control, and you don't hear about that anymore.
No, you don't hear about that so much. It's not that the research has stopped. It's just kind of gone underground because a lot of people have become aware of, the famous, for example, Kissinger Memorandum, SSM 200, and various programs to depopulate countries through various means. And this is, believe me, alive and well. It's just not necessarily being done in the way that a lot of people think it is. And I've tried to describe some of these, especially in the third world, the way it's actually done. As Bucky Fuller pointed out a long time ago, if you bring the level of economic life of a country up from the sort of completely, totally despairing level of many third world countries, and people begin to get a toehold on living a decent life, the birth rate will go down.
True.
And that has been sitting there as the real solution to, you know, 50 billion people on the planet or whatever, you know, it might eventually become. There's been a conscious choice on the part of the depopulators not to go that route. The route they want to take is large depopulation of areas, taking over the land, slave labor or almost slave labor. Let's get the mineral resources. Let's put all of this into the hands of major transnationals, etc., etc. This ties in with so-called free trade, with the World Trade Organization. There's a great deal to talk about there, but limits to growth, the Club of Rome, and all of that was basically a piece of propaganda aimed at trying to convince professionals and public and the press that population control was absolutely necessary by any means, and that was and is a lie.
Population control and human control.
Absolutely.
Let's go to a West of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Hi.
John, I have a, I don't know if it's a statement or a question.
Well, whatever your choice is, go ahead.
Okay. Well, John, you talk in such a calm, measured way, but you're saying extreme things. You're saying that the World Health Organization is involved. You've used the word population reduction. I don't believe you used the word genocide, but it's eerily similar to that. And I'd like you to get more specific about who the heck is doing it. You know, I mean, personally, I don't believe you, but I'd like you to get specific. Is it the U.S. government? Is it the G7 nations? Is it General Motors? Can you help me out on this one?
Try punching in Bilderberg on Google and start reading. We're talking about global sort of fraternal organizations of extreme heavy hitters. Look up the membership lists of Bilderberg, Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission. Really study those and begin to see that these are not American organizations, these are not French organizations or German organizations. These are composed of extreme heavy hitters who believe that the future of the planet is the few ruling the many.
They took this upon themselves to appoint themselves God, did they not?
That's right. And they believe they are doing exactly the right thing. And this is another, you know, 4-hour show at least on all of this.
Well,
but
maybe a whole week.
Yeah, a whole week. But it is basically these people who have determined that depopulation needs to take place. They employ many, many front organizations in order to bring this about. These front organizations know almost nothing about the real agenda they are serving. In the intelligence lingo, you would call these organizations cutouts.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization is essentially a cutout of these people. It functions in that way, but not knowingly, for the most part. And this is how the world is basically run, because these people have determined that the only way that the planet is going to survive or should survive is if they control it.
Jump ahead 20 years from now, John. What's this planet look like in terms of operational control?
Well, if we don't do something about it, if it continues to go on in the same way.
Right, same vein. Nothing changes.
Let's say we go ahead 30 years from now. We will have experienced a number of these incredible operations that involve medically induced fear of germs and, you know, certain staged bio or chemical events or attacks. The rights of people all over the world will be severely curtailed to travel, to criticize medical research. People will be told what drugs and vaccines to take, where to go, what to do. They must do it. Nation states will be all but extinct. Nation states will be involved in regions such as the European Union, for example, as a region, which has just drafted a new constitution for all of Europe that they are hoping to get ratified fairly soon, a major step forward for them, which means that now in Europe, or pretty soon in Europe, you know, you can be arrested by somebody for a crime that has nothing to do with your tradition of law in your country and placed before a court according to rules that have nothing to do with the tradition of law in your country. You've got an Asian region. You've got a European region. You've got a region that extends from the northern tip of North America down to the south end of South America. And these regions are basically controlled by councils. They could be called anything. Who knows how they will be called, but you could have something like the North-South America Free Trade Union. And all of this is an attempt to exert more and more control over larger areas of land and more people by fewer and fewer people. It will never be called anything that we know about. In other words, it's not going to be called socialism, communism, fascism, monarchy, democracy, capitalism, or any of that, because those are all words for the controllers that mean nothing. They use those words, left, right, center. You can call it totalitarian, whatever. They just simply use ideas and ideals and words to cement more control. And you are going to see policies instituted whereby more and more you're going to see people fit into jobs, into slots. You're going to see ant colonies of the 21st century where people are conditioned and schooled to go into the marketplace and work at certain jobs. You're going to see attempts to actually enhance people's abilities in certain areas with the use of chemicals and genes and implants and all sorts of things and electromagnetic means of what you really have to call mind control, so that more and more, under the guise of saying this is the greatest good for the greatest number, so that the planet will survive and will not end in a catastrophe, we must tell you how to live your life. And this is good because you will be secure and protected and everything will be well. And we will all get along together.
Everybody will eat. Everyone will have jobs. But that may not be the case.
That's right. And population numbers will be greatly reduced. And the trend will definitely be down, especially in the third world.
Instead of 6 billion people, we may end up with 3 billion, 2 billion.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I see we're getting toward the end. If you don't mind, I'd like to give out an email address.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, John. We only got about 2 minutes left. So
okay.
Go ahead.
If people are interested in this brewing class action suit in Canada against World Health Organization, the CDC, they can write to healthchoicevoice@yahoo.ca. That's in Canada, healthchoicevoice@yahoo.ca. Thanks,
right.
George.
Very good. And your website as well is nomorefakenews.com. I would like to do a program with you on your Secret Societies book.
I would
Secret
love to
Behind
do that.
Secret Societies. I think
I would
that
love
would be
to
very
that.
Intriguing. Okay, let's do that, John. You take care of yourself, and let's see what unfolds in the next couple of weeks with SARS and monkeypox and all these other so-called diseases, huh?
Yeah, really. Thanks so much, George.
I really appreciate it. That's John Rappaport. I'm telling you, what he does say, though, is pretty darn frightening, isn't it?